Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is another exciting edition of Inside the Movies and More. I'm one of the hosts here. My name is Scott, and I have my co-host here. Don, are you on with me?
I am. I actually skipped the Enchantment Under the Sea dance just to be here tonight.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Did you run into Calvin Klein by any chance?
I bumped into some guy as he was coming out of the dressing room. I don't know if that was Calvin or not. He was very short.
Very short. Short. Did
like
you
5
see?
5'5", maybe? I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, let me tell you something. You know, we were at the same dance there, and there's some big scuffle going on outside with two gentlemen here. And looked like rumor on the streets here is that one of the nerdy guys beat up the bad guy or the bully, per se, of the school, knocked him straight clean out. Right on the floor here. I don't know if you heard that information.
I did hear. I heard that he even used a bad word when he jumped in there to save this girl. The nerdy guy did it.
Nerds rule the world. Hey, everyone, you know, we were actually a little bit role-playing here. Actually, this is an exciting show. It is Back to the Future, ladies and gentlemen, edition here. It is 2015. Don, and there is a significant year. Why is this a significant year? Enlighten the guests why is this a significant year for us.
Well, for two reasons. And first of all, let me say I'm always so happy to be on the show, but especially tonight. I've been so excited about this. This is like our favorite movie. So this is like the most fun thing to talk about. But now there's kind of a two-tiered interest here in this particular year. Because first of all, obviously in Back to the Future, that was released in 1985. I was 9. I think you were -1. but that was released. This is the 30th anniversary of the original Back to the Future. And then, of course, in Back to the Future 2, which I think that was released in 89. But when they released that movie, that was when they actually went to the future. And this was the year they went to 2015. So it's exciting in so many different ways.
I was 2 by then, actually. When two came out.
You were 2 when 2 came out. Would have been 3 when 3 came out as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely here. You know, so
it's amazing you weren't named Clint Eastwood.
Marty McFly, for instance.
Right.
Jeez. There's a lot of things that happened in that movie that, for years, a lot of people have called it the Back to the Future prophecy because they made this movie 20-something years, actually 30 years ago, a lot of things came to pass that they quote-unquote predicted that they say that now we do have. Prime example, flat-screen televisions. In the scene where Marty is in his house here, he is on a flat-screen television and also Skyping, video chatting.
I didn't think about that. Absolutely.
Yeah. That is that
video
we
chat,
have that nowadays.
Yeah.
Yep. As well as different faxes, sending faxes. As well as AT&T. Here's a little funny part about it. AT&T being a mobile carrier in telecommunications, and of course they are one of the biggest powerhouses we have today, and they were back then. Eyeglassware, like virtual glasses. We do have Google Glasses. Google Glass here. We do have flying cars. They're not the type of flying cars that are in the movie, but we do have flying cars. Let's see what else they have here.
They basically, I know it's still kind of in prototype and they're still kind of working on it and everything, but hoverboards are apparently a thing now.
Hoverboards are by Hendo hoverboard.
Right.
So.
And I'll tell you, the thing that amazes me is if you look at like all these amazing pieces of technology, I'm a baseball fan, and nobody would have ever thought that Miami would be in the World Series, and much less that they would play Chicago. But Chicago has an amazing team coming up this year. So they might actually end up in the World Series. Whether Miami ends up against them or not, I don't know. But you remember there was that line in number two, Miami has a baseball team? So yes, they predicted that Miami has a baseball team now. I'll tell you the thing that I'm still waiting for. I mean, I know I'll walk around with my jeans pockets outturned, you know, just as a thing to make me feel better. But I want to get to that point to where businessmen are wearing two neckties. Remember that? You have the two neckties.
Oh man, that'd be amazing.
That would be a cool thing to start rocking.
You know, and they were, and the thing is, they were talking about also about the internet, and how the internet, how it was very accessible in your home. Now, back in the 80s, late 80, 89, the internet wasn't that. What internet? You know, it was in massive rooms, and now we of course have it very accessible as it is. Now, the funny part here is they talked about 3D. Now, 3D has been around forever. It's actually been around before that movie came out. But talking about Jaws and 3D and stuff like that, and it's just funny that they have all these dealing with the IMAXs and that type of big cinematic stuff and big displays. We do have that here. And also, there's so much stuff that they've talked about in the movie that, of course, as well, we don't have it yet. Like, prime example, Marty McFly's father coming in because he blew his back out, coming in some upside down like contraption here.
I get that. But at the same time, you brought up just in the last couple of minutes, you brought up things that I never realized. I mean, I know that, yeah, a lot of that stuff has happened, but there are certain things that absolutely, those things have kind of happened like that. Now, I'm just thinking like just this reference that you made to that, you know, there was that big moment where the 3D Jaws thing where he comes out and he's like right on the sidewalk, you know. That's a big thing now. I mean, 3D IMAX in your face stuff, you know, there's you look at, from James Cameron on, I mean, you look, there's so many movies out there these days that that they roll it out in 3D, you know, that wouldn't have been thought of in 1985.
Absolutely. Now the other thing here, you
or
know, 1989. Now we do have the McFly Nikes. Nikes came out here a couple years ago with the official Fly. They don't have power laces, but it was a big thing here. The Nike Mag Airs are out there. They're expensive as heck. There's a limited amount of them. So if you get your hands on them, typically I've been seeing them going online between $700 to $1,000 still for
the
bad
cheap.
Boy.
Those are not cheap games.
Now, China's made some prototype, you know, knockoffs that you can pick up. But if you want the legitimate
to our listeners, be careful when you go picking up the McFly shoes because there are these replicas that are like the size of a keychain. they don't look like the size of a keychain when you go on eBay, but they show up in your mailbox. You're like, what? These are my shoes? I don't have these that small, you know. And it's basically the size of a jewelry box. But I'll tell you what, Scotty. You know, let's go back in time for a little bit. Again, I know this is a little bit before your time, but 1985. You know, when this movie came out, it was huge. When the original Back to the Future movie came out, they made $383 million. And I'm sure anybody that's listening out there, they're film buffs. They probably know this that, Michael J. Fox was the first choice to play Marty McFly, but they couldn't get him because he was tied up in the his ABC TV series, Family Ties, you know. And he was such a big part of that show. I mean, I don't think people tuned in to see Tina Yothers and Michael Gross and Meredith Baxter Burney and Justine Bateman. Well, actually, yeah, again. I tuned in to see Justine Bieber. But, you know, people tuned in to see Alex P. Keaton, you know. And so Meredith Baxter Burney, actually, when they were launching the show, when they were getting ready to go into filming, Meredith Baxter Burney was on maternity leave. So they couldn't have two stars out, you know, so they would not allow. So they went with Eric Stoltz, who had really impressed them. He played, he was the lead in Mask with Cher, which was a big movie, the year before. So he was kind of a big thing. So they were like, let's go with this guy. They did 5 weeks of filming. I mean, they filmed, you know, almost half the script with Eric Stoltz and Eric and Zemeckis. They both agreed that it was like, hey, it's not working, you know, and apparently Eric was even Spielberg said, you know, that he gave a really good dramatic performance, but he wasn't finding the comedy in it. He was, like, playing it a little too heavy. So they canned Stoltz, you know, with 5 weeks in the can. It cost them $3 million to go back to the beginning. And at that point, two things happened. First of all, Michael J. Fox had a little bit more flexibility, but also he had a lot more power at that point. So he was able to kind of negotiate. But what he was doing is he would go to he would show up to film you know, in those days, you know, you showed up. That was a 6 days a week job running a sitcom. And so he would show up and he would be there from, you know, 6 a.m. all the way up to 6 p.m. And then Universal would come with a car and take him over to the Universal lot, and they would start shooting at 6:30, and they would shoot from 6:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. He was going on an average of 5 hours of sleep per night, and then on the weekend he was that's where they did all their daytime shots. So I mean, you talk about burning the candle at both ends. Fox was he was exhausted when he made this movie, and you look back at it, and you know, we're talking about the original one, the first Back to the Future. He was just amazing. The energy that he brought to that film, it's like, can you believe this guy? You know, he's not sleeping. He's waking up, and he's like in front of a camera from 6 a.m. until 2:30 a.m., and then he goes and gets a couple of hours of sleep, and then he goes right back out and does it again. Just amazing.
Now let's remind the audience, they didn't have Red Bulls back then. They didn't have Monster
Drink. Right, there's no Red Bull.
This was, you know. Now the exciting part. Now factor this, guys. If anyone's been to California, has been into the Hollywood scene, okay. ABC is not like a hop, skip, jump away, okay. And you look at a map, you're like, oh, that's really easy. No, traffic's ridiculous. Okay, so what would typically think you would take about 20, 30 minutes, probably take about an hour and a half to 2 hours to get to that spot, no joke, depending on traffic, with the traffic. Now, Warner Brothers and Universal are right next to each other, so if they were filming something like that, bump, the hop, skip, jump. But ABC was still in the vicinity, but they were on the other side of the Burbank area. So, he was definitely running back and forth here.
That was not hopping across the yard. That was a journey.
It was a journey.
Well, you know, you got to kind of maybe you kind of think of it. Maybe that's like the 45 minutes of peace on not in front of a camera that he actually got each day. Maybe that was good that he had that little bit of a journey, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, and you can definitely – if you got this Back to the Future Special Edition, 25th Anniversary, Blu-ray or regular thing, they have packed chock full of behind-the-scenes footage, commentary with Robert Zemeckis, Steven Spielberg. Now, I'm a big Spielberg fan. That's the person I want to meet one day. I've actually studied all his work, and I think he's just a fantastic director, someone I look up to. And pretty much, and of course, Robert Zemeckis, you put those two guys together to make this fantastic trilogy, and it's one of these things that you can't even a lot of people are like, oh, the third one's not that great, but it's still good. You know, the whole series itself is a fantastic series, and my favorite is 2. I love 2. This is one of my favorites because they go back in time, they go forward in time, they gotta go back in time, they go to the present. I mean, it's really all over the place. You know, and just one other thing, a lot of people that check this out, for those that love the Botox, Okay, if you're a Botox extraordinaire.
Where are we going with that one? I love it.
Okay, all right. In 1989, Doc Brown went to a rejuvenating clinic.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, he went to a rejuvenating clinic and took off 40 years. This is way before Botox. So, once again, Back to the Future 2 has enlightened us with Botox. So, yeah, there is. You can go back and watch it for those that have it, if you not have it. Now, for those that are, we're talking to you right now and have not seen the project, have not seen Back to the Future, shame on you. Okay, how can you be a movie lover and not watch this movie? No, I'm joking with you guys. Don't, no, we're not critical to you. Go out there and get it. I promise you, don't even rent it. I don't think you can't even rent it. You got
to
buy
it. Yeah,
you
need to own it. You have to take it in a couple of times. You know, one of the things that you were talking about Spielberg, you know, and, you know, the nexus of this whole project, you know, it laid in wait there. It was, they brought this out there like late 70s. And the thing was, like, they Bob Gale and Zemeckis, they put it out there, and Bob Gale, who was one of the big screenwriters on it, you know, he was the one that kind of conceptualized the idea, because he went to go visit his parents' home, and he was looking through his dad's yearbook, his dad's high school yearbook, and he saw that he was, like, the president of his class, and he was like, you know, I wonder if I went back in time, would I, like, be friends with my dad in high school? And so that's, like, kind of where the whole script came from. And so they went to roll it out, and then what happened was their timing was just, it was really weird. It's because, you know, that, like, they brought it to a lot of different producers, and a lot of producers turned it down because, and this is really strange, but they said it wasn't, especially for early 80s, they said that it wasn't raunchy enough. It was too saccharine. You know, I mean, and you got to think about, you know, this is at the same time of Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Porky's and these movies, and they were like, it's, you know, it's way too, it's not naughty enough, you know, maybe you should take it to Disney. So they go to take it to Disney, and Disney says, no, we can't make this. I mean, this is basically a movie about a mother falling in love with her son. We won't touch it. So there's like this big gap there. It's like they weren't raunchy enough to, you know, to get the major producers, but at the same time, they, you know, there was an Oedipal element in there that they, you know, they couldn't get somebody like Disney to make it. So what happened was the Bob Gale and Zemeckis, they went to do Romancing the Stone. And the thing was, they didn't want to come right into Spielberg and Amblin Entertainment and try to champion Back to the Future, because they felt that it would make them seem like, you know, we just get movies made because we know Spielberg. So they went and they made Romancing the Stone, which was a big hit. And so then they had some cachet, you know, so then they could come back. And of course, Spielberg was all over it and, you know, had great foresight to make the movie. You know, another thing about this film, I don't think a lot of people know about this, but you know, there was a, from the mid 80s to the early 90s, there was a huge resurgence in the skateboard scene and the skate scene, you know, that became a big thing in the 80s, you know, skating on your skateboard, you know, with punk rock and everything else. That all started because of Marty McFly. And turns out that was one of the reasons they really didn't like Eric Stoltz, was because he was not very comfortable on a skateboard. But
he was
Michael
very
J.
dry.
Fox was a, he was a skater.
Yeah, like you see like some of the test footage, and it was just like, man, there's nobody else, there's nobody that could fit that character but MJF. There was nobody else that could fit it. That movie was, the script was made for him. And one thing in this business here is, when you have a script made for somebody, that's a catch 22. You're playing roulette, because
that's a good way of putting it.
You try to make a script that you can find the person to play it properly, but you don't want to make it, because they made the script for Michael J. Fox. Like,
they
already
did.
Had
Absolutely.
Him in mind.
Yeah.
They knew this is what they wanted. This is Marty McFly. So when their scriptwriter's writing, he's designing next character to be Michael J. Fox.
Right.
And so when you try to throw somebody else in to fill that shoes, oh, yeah. there's a couple million dollars down the toilet.
Absolutely, and you think about the $3 million that it cost them to go back and reshoot all that stuff. That's $383 million. That's a pittance. That $3 million is a pittance when it comes to
it really is.
To properly casting the role. And you know what they if you go back and look at the interviews with the people that made the movie, what they say is here's the thing, Eric Stoltz was a nice guy. There was nothing wrong with him as a person. He wasn't like a diva or anything like that. I mean, he came in and he did his job. But what he did was he came in and he acted the part of Marty McFly. Whereas Michael J. Fox came in and he was Marty McFly. He brought a personality with him.
That's
the big changer right there.
Well, exactly. And that's one thing out those people that listen to this, because we do have inside of, we do post this on, this is technically like Visms, like radio show. One thing we can tell you out there is, for actors out there listening, you have to become the character. Don't act the character. And, Christopher Walken is amazing at acting the character, but he gets away with it. He's Christopher Walken. Yeah. When he played Peter Pan and Captain Hook, when he played Captain Hook and Peter Pan, it was Christopher Walken acting like Captain Hook. Yeah. It just wasn't him becoming Captain Hook. And that's why Peter Pan didn't live in Tutuai, plus many other things. But at the same token here, is you also have to equivalent how much money that movie made. Over $300 million. Now, that was back in the 80s, okay?
Yeah.
If you take that same movie and you slap it now, you're talking about easily that movie making over $1 billion.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah, and then also the – and then these days, I mean, if that movie had been made these days, all of the tangential endorsements and products that would have been. Now I'm sure Pepsi probably paid them a lot of money, but the thing
and
is
Nike.
Too. I mean they
and Nike.
Nike absolutely. But there's some nice little gentle product placement in there. But I mean it was strong enough. I mean these guys, if you think about $383 million. Hey, look, it was strong enough that they decided that it's a franchise. To the point that we're going to shoot number two and number three together. We're just going to,
yes.
For the next couple of years, we're just going to shoot these other two sequels. Let's bank this stuff, while we can. And it's funny, Scotty, you mentioned earlier that that number three, like there are people that may say bad things about it. If you took that movie by itself, it would be a great late 80s movie.
Mm-hmm.
What I think people do is they kind of take it in and, they compare it to the first two. And the first two were just so good. It's like, how can you make a third one? Now, I thought the third one was great. I thought it was very fun. And there was some, I thought we got to see a lot more. We got to develop Doc Brown a lot more in the third one, which is what I really
liked.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, I loved all three of them. I think that number three was a great way to wrap things up. And, I'll tell you what, I will say this. I know that there's been, we've seen reboots of all these different movies, from the Karate Kid. Oh, that hurt me so bad to see them even try to do that. But we have not seen anybody reboot Back to the Future. But I don't know if you're aware of this. Back to the Future, the musical, is scheduled to open in 2015 on the West End in London, which is basically London's Broadway. I would be a little worried about it, but the people behind the project, the guy that wrote the music is Alan Silvestri, who wrote the score, and then Robert Zemeckis wrote the book. He wrote the script. So, and Bob Gale is also involved. So all of the original creators are in there. So it's not like some people, it's not some hack job. The original guys are coming in there and putting that thing together. So I'm thinking, maybe it'll be a cool thing. From what I've been reading, they're using a lot of illusion work and a lot of skateboarding on stage and stuff. So I don't know. I think it might be pretty cool.
I'm anxious
to see what they do with it.
Hopefully it comes here to the States. I think it will.
I mean, they're going to run it over there. I would be right there at opening day, right there at the wherever you get the tickets for it. I'd love to see
it.
Love to see what they do.
Absolutely.
With it.
We talked about Michael J. Fox, right?
Oh, yeah.
We got like, wow, time has gone by fast. Look at that. We're out of time.
Back to the future.
Back to the future.
We'll go back for 30 minutes.
Exactly. Now, listen, guys, I'd love to have some Back to the Future clips here, and hopefully maybe I get some here in the near future, but right now we don't own the licensing to those. Hopefully I can maybe work something here in the future. Who knows? But we cannot go without talking about the person that brung us the flux capacitor, that said, if you're going to travel time travel, you better do it in style. Mr. Christopher Lloyd, Doc himself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because without him, there would be no Marty McFly. There wouldn't be no time travel. There wouldn't be no Einstein. There wouldn't be nothing. Now, for those of you who know Einstein, for those who haven't seen the movie, his dog's name's Einstein. Don't think Einstein the scientist. Okay? But you have to understand, Christopher Lloyd brung, first off, he's an amazing, amazing performer. And the cast of that whole, when you have a dream team cast, Back to the Future had a dream team cast.
Yeah.
They had a cast that was fantastic. Biff, the guy that played Biff, oh, his range from playing young Biff to old Biff to Wild Wild West Biff, it was amazing. It was really amazing. But Doc, when you see him come out, when that DeLorean comes out, the first time you see it, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, that car was made for the future.
You know what's really funny too about that whole thing is that Doc was amazing, and I know that you've done some work with Universal and at their theme park here in Orlando. That's they had a great attraction, a great ride here, and unfortunately went by the wayside. So sad, but you can still see Doc out there. You know, you can get photo shots with him at his and got a DeLorean out there. But you know what's really interesting though is that in terms of casting, is that whole Eric Stoltz / MJF thing, that really adjusted a lot of the different casting. Like the Jennifer, the girl that originally played his girlfriend, that was a different actress. It was an actress that had really good chemistry with Eric Stoltz. And a lot of this had to do with his height, with Michael J. Fox's height. Because Biff almost did not get cast. The reason they cast Biff, they had a different guy who ended up being one of Biff's henchmen, but there was a J.J. Cohen was the actor's name. He was originally scheduled to play Biff, and he didn't because he didn't seem big enough and intimidating enough to tower over Eric Stoltz. So they brought the actor that plays Biff in. And they probably wouldn't have made that adjustment because Michael J. Fox, everybody towers over him, is 5'5". You know, the same thing with his girlfriend. You know, they wanted to you're looking at film, you're looking at pictures, you want everybody to kind of line up. But you know, the first person that they approached for Doc Brown, talking about Christopher Lloyd, John Lithgow was actually the first approach.
I'm sure
he would have been great, but no, I mean, you know, man, like you said, Christopher Lloyd really made a big part of that movie happen. He was just so good, and all three of them, especially the third one, it was incredible.
Now for all those that haven't, if you watch it, they did such subtle. But for all those that don't know, this is the girlfriend from the first movie.
Right.
To the Future is not the same girlfriend in the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
Totally two different actresses. But the actress, they look like pretty much close. It was crazy.
They're very close. And the same is also true with George McFly.
Yep.
Crispin Glover played him in the first one, and then Crispin Glover is he's a brilliant actor, but he's absolutely nuts. So there's some sort of contract dispute or whatever else you want to call it. So there was a different guy that stepped in too, and that was a pretty tangential role. I mean, that was they didn't have to do any like major face shots or anything for number two and number three. Yep. They just kind of had to fill stuff in.
That's when they flipped them upside down.
Sued. Well, they actually, I think Crispin Glover actually sued Amblin Entertainment because they used some of his. They used his likeness or whatever else. I mean, there's a, it was some sort of SAG, some sort of SAG law that was put into place that he was taken advantage of. I don't think he won. But anyhow, yeah. So, I mean, there were a lot of casting choices that were kind of mixed around. But, most people, like you said, Scott, most people don't realize, that you were looking at a different girlfriend or that you were looking at a different George McFly. Or that you were looking at, at differences there because the cast was so centered on, Marty and Doc man, you got to give it to Miss Thompson. How amazing was she throughout
Fantastic.
All three of those films? So there were some great entertainment. I mean, great performances, but also some great storytelling. Those people really put a nice story together and held it together.
That was a once in a blue moon film. that was finding that's like the stars aligned and everything was perfect for that.
I don't think you'll ever see that happen again to where. We're like right now, and we were talking about this on the last show about how franchise movies are all the rage right now. But I don't think you will ever see. I don't think it's going to be difficult to find a trilogy that is that unmatched. When it comes to just pure quality and great storytelling the whole way through, and great acting, but the whole way through, mm-hmm. just from performances to production values. But, it's kind of a bittersweet thing. It's 1985. It's like 30 years ago. Really? Seriously? The first one was 30 years ago?
Yeah.
And here we are in 2015. Where's now watch, if the Chicago Cubs end up playing the Miami Marlins in the World Series, I'm going to flip out. I'm sure everybody else will. That would be amazing.
I'm going to go find an almanac, buddy. And I'm going to find a DeLorean how we can go back in time. That's what I'm going to do.
Put it in the glove box. Don't leave it on the dash. Put it in the glove box.
No. And for all those now keep in mind here, guys, when we're going to do another special Back to the Future 2, a little segment when the official date when they go back in time hits later on this year. Awesome. We'll be back on the air, and we're really going to give that whole, and we're going to give all the stops here. And I don't know what Vism can do, but I'm going to see what I can do. And hopefully by that time, we can maybe have a special guest call in. I don't know who it is, but I don't know if we can. But let's keep my fingers crossed that we can make that happen here. Because that's a franchise that no one wants to reboot. You can't. It's sacrilegious. Right. You can't reboot that franchise. Now, for the fans out there, would we like to see another one? Oh my God, yes! You said it. You says at the end of whatever. It's been 30 years. If you haven't seen the movie, you're living under a rock. All right. So at the end of the movie, at the end of number three, okay, Doc Brown's. You see the DeLorean destroyed, and that's it. Bye bye. No more time machine. But oh wait, all of a sudden, Doc Brown has come back from the past. And he's got kids, okay? He's got kids. He says, of course, he has his wife. And he's built a new time machine out of a train, the coolest train on the planet.
Yeah.
And then he just, all of a sudden, he time travels out, and they just leave us on that now there's another time machine. And there's kids involved. Why can we not see a fourth one? But at the same token, we sort of don't want a fourth one because we don't want the ruin of the trilogy. So it's like a bittersweet hug. And one thing I have to say is it's 2015. I mean, holy cow. You know, a movie that takes place, you know, now. And I know, and I know, and I know, I know that, you know, the news media and people are going to be talking about 2015 and Back to the Future because it's such a significant movie dealing with this year. And they're going to bring it up, and I know everything like that, but we definitely want to bring it to you, talk about it at the beginning of the year, and get you guys all hyped and aware. And those that have not seen the film, definitely go watch it, buy it. It's truly, truly an exciting time here in the future, and we'll see what happens. It's still the beginning of 2015, and we'll see what the future holds for the rest of the year. Who knows? Maybe someone will come out later on with official flying car that we can all drive, and who knows? Who knows what the future holds
Scott,
for all of us?
Hey, Scotty, before we wrap up, you know I've got to say it. You know I'm going to step in and talk about it. Thank God. You know, I wrote an article a couple of years ago about how Eric Stoltz may have helped save the world, because the fact that he clashed and did not work in the original Back to the Future that brought Michael J. Fox back onto the film, onto the project, and gave him some amazing screen clout to where when he was diagnosed with adult early onset Parkinson's. I read a book of his, and a lot of the stuff that we were talking about I got from his book, Always Looking Up, which, you know, he's 5'5", so he's always looking up, you know, but he's also always optimistic, you know. And when he was diagnosed, he said that, a lot of people can get upset, they can go, you know, kill themselves or whatever they want to do. But, you know, at this point, you know, he looked back at his life and he said, you know, I've had an amazing life. I've got an amazing life. I can't, you know, sit here and cast aspersions here. You know, I mean, I've had an amazing life. I've been very lucky. And so he turned that into the Michael J. Fox Foundation, which they've raised over $400 million for Parkinson's research. And that research also goes to a lot of other uncured diseases he really is changing the world. He really is. And I think a lot of that is because that's where Back to the Future really gives more, because, I mean, if you were to take that out of his career, you know, he would still have been an amazingly talented actor with a great resume and everything else. But that really propelled him into superstardom. And I think that's where a lot of people really got they really took notice when he stepped up and he started his foundation. And they're continually raising a lot of money for it. So, I think I do this every week, even if we don't talk about Michael J. Fox, I think I still bring it up. But yeah, the Michael J. Fox Foundation, michaeljfoxfoundation.com.
Absolutely.
Just throw a dollar at those guys. They do an amazing job.
Fantastic. I agree with you 150%, guys. Check it out, Michael J. Fox, the Foundation.
I can't believe
Google
I went
it.
This long during our Back to the Future episode without mentioning Michael
J. Fox.
And didn't plug it.
Well, hey, guys, you know, we are out of time. Just in time.
How about
so,
that?
Guys, thank you guys so much for listening to Inside the Movies More. We'll be back on the air next Saturday. Once again,
maybe it was last Saturday.
Year. It was last Saturday. Was it this Saturday?
We'll be back online on last Saturday at the same time.
Anyways, guys, once again, thank you guys so much for listening. This is Scott, the host, as well with Don, Theo. You can also check out his show, Bibliocast, here earlier in the evenings at 6 p.m. And you can also listen to all this under the VISM Radio Network at vismstudios.com under our projects. You can also listen to an archive on Stitcher as well. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and it was a pleasure once again. And we will see you, hopefully, in the future or in the past or in the present. So thank you guys for listening in. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.